Good evening. The Clark County Clean Water Commission meeting for Wednesday, November 2nd, 2016 is called to order. We'll start with the roll call. Commissioner Shue?
Here.
Commissioner Burnett?
Here.
Commissioner LaManna?
Here.
Commissioner McDevitt?
Is here.
Commissioner Meyer is not here. This would have been his last meeting, and he has chosen not to reapply. So the Public Works Department, the county manager whom we report to, will be looking for a replacement.
Yeah.
I suppose we'll hear about it some particular one.
Yeah, and there has been an announcement that has been...
A publication.
Yeah. And applications are being accepted currently.
Commissioner Norris emailed me just a little bit ago and said she is home ill and asked to be excused this evening. Commissioner Schaefer.
Present.
And Commissioner Schneider.
Here.
It appears that, Commissioner Friday. So, out of the nine commissioners, it appears that we have seven, and seven is a quorum for legal. Okay, let's take a moment and look at our packet for the meeting this evening. You'll notice that we have our meeting summary notes that we'll review and then I'll ask for approval. We also have several presentations this evening. From the Clean Water Division, we have a presentation from Jane Tessner Kleiner. And we also have a presentation from Friends of the Trees as well. So I guess, yes. In the room, we will certainly allow opportunity for comments if we choose to make them. We have a then discussion about the bylaws update that Commissioner Schneider emailed to us. We'll review, see if we're comfortable with those changes. We'll talk for a few minutes, Commissioner LaManna, about our annual update, the timing, and how we're going to handle that. We'll talk then a little about strategic planning, and specifically from the last meeting, how we can do an even better job in 2017 of outreaching to the public discussion there. And then we will near wrap up the agenda with nomination and election of the 2017 chair and vice chair. Just to be clear, I will not be running for either position. I will be in my second year as chair, and I happen to believe that it's appropriate on a regular basis to turn leadership over to others to continue the lifeblood in the direction. So when we get to that particular point, we'll take nominations for the chair. We'll do a written ballot. We have blank paper, and Andre and I will count the votes. And then we'll do the vice chair, and those positions then will become effective January 1st, 2017 for the next week. Any questions about the agenda, please? So, then let's move to review the meeting summary notes for Wednesday, September 7th, 2016. Any questions, comment, or discussion? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion that we approve the meeting on it. Have a second? Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? We pass 7-4. Let's move to our first opportunity for public comments. Do we have anybody in attendance in the public this evening that would like to make any comments to the commission? None at this time. We will offer a second opportunity to speak. Hearing no comments from the public, we will close the first public comment session. So, next up on the agenda then is a presentation. Please.
Good evening. My name is Jane Tessner Kleiner, and I'm one of the project coordinators for the Clean Water Division of Public Works. And I do a lot of the outreach education coordination with many of our partners in the agency. So I'm just going to give you a quick context of what our outreach education program is. And I had a great presentation recently from Bob Patterson, talking about our outreach businesses and technical assistance for this. I'm going to give you some context, and then one of our new initiatives that's really kicking off, Megan's going to launch into and explain one of our new projects as well. So Just in case you don't remember, that's our website, and I'm going to refer to that. We have tons of great information on our website. So, with everything we do, I have to give context to why we do what we do, and all sorts of the magical permits that you've heard so much about. It is a 5-year permit. It will expire at the end of August 2018. Then we'll get a new set of requirements. For public education outreach, it will probably be a lot of the same. That's a section. You can see it online. I've got links to it online. There's 3 sections in there. And there's basically 5 components that you'll see here. 1 is to build general awareness of general stormwater issues. 2 is affect behavior. We want people to stop doing the nasty stuff, do the good stuff, and protect stormwater. And then we have to either create opportunities or partner for opportunities to provide stewardship opportunities for folks to get hands-on engagement, which is what Megan's going to talk about, one of those great projects. There's one project that they added to the permit this year that was new. We had to pick a targeted audience and a targeted message and go out and test that theory and see how we're doing with our education for that audience and that message, do pre and post survey for it, and then come up with recommendations and changes. And I will talk about it. It's this lovely blue report. It's got all the survey stuff in it. I'll put it over here. I have several examples of the outreach materials that we have, printed materials there. But you can look at that too. We wrapped up the gas station spill kit program last fall. We wrapped it about a year ago. And I'll talk in a minute about some of the things that we learned through that effort and how we're going to implement some of those changes based on what we learned. It was very insightful. Now, the permit also prescribes the audiences that we have to talk to. And when you read this, it's everybody within our jurisdiction, the general public, students, businesses, et cetera. And within each of those groups, they have very specific messaging that we need to do for each of those audiences. So it's very prescribed. But generally, anybody who we can get their attention, such as you and our audience members, to say, don't pollute, don't put stuff down the storm drain, protect stormwater, that's what we do. There's 27 specific messages that we have to get out, and it kind of lumps into some of these categories. Some are very specific, like carpet cleaning and pet waste. If you've seen any carpet cleaners going around with their mobile trucks and see foam near some of the drains outside the carpet complexes and stuff, we are unfortunately seeing them dumped directly out into the storm drain systems. We managed to pull up on site once, right as she was dumping. It's like, whoa, hold on, let me teach you something. But there's many other things that we have to teach about. LID stands for Low Impact Development, so the new guidelines that are in place here in Clark County related to the stormwater manual. Flow control BMPs, best management practices. Bob probably talked a lot about that last time. That's that giant 1,000-page manual that I think we talked to you probably this time last year about. And many, many others that are in there. And when we start to connect the dots, things like engineers and contractors, they need to know how to develop and design properly to minimize impact. Students, they want us to teach a general impact. They're the next generation of us who are going to need to know this information. Businesses, how they handle their hazardous waste materials. They need to know about that kind of stuff. And just the general public, things like how they handle the trash, the pet waste, dog waste, that kind of thing, so it doesn't leak into the system. So there's many tools that we use to get the message out. And a lot of these are the basic stuff that you would expect from any agency. We have most of our stuff on the web that you can access. There's lots of links there. We're just starting to really ramp up social media. We'll have a whole new social media campaign that we'll launch in 2017 based on kind of what the current marketing tells us about success with media, like Facebook ads are one of the most popular tools and very cost-effective tools to get out there. We have event-based learning, where we set up a booth at, like, Recycle Arts Festival, go to the Eco Fair up at Klein-Line Pond that happens the Earth Day, that kind of thing. We have hands-on learning stewardship, like what Megan will talk about, and things like our Green School Summit that I'll be attending tomorrow, and teacher trainings that we do. And the technical assistance visits, the thing that like Bob talked about, where we go out to businesses and specifically help them understand how they can be better stewards of their properties and not contribute. It's unfortunately a very long website, what you can do for clean water, but once you get to the stormwater page, you can see that link very quickly on the left side of the page. Here's some of the examples of the things that we do. We have a KIS for Clean Water program that's been around for about 10 years. Sally Fisher and Cindy Steinberger have really run that program. It's going to transition a little bit this year to a new staff person that we're going to bring on board here in about a month or so. It's got Buddy the Clean Water Dog, very happy looking dog, and we have where people can pledge online. They get some free swag, they get a bandana, they get a little certificate, all those kind of things. And it's very popular. I probably got 2 or 3 people signing up every week. We promote that through the Green Neighbors Program. Business source control, we talked about, with Bob Blackson. Green Neighbors, so when we were Environmental Services, we had 3 main programs to reach a lot of our audience members: Green Schools, Green Business, and Green Neighbors. Green Neighbors is kind of that general audience. The Public Health Department now runs those programs, and they will stay and build their successes, so we will continue to partner with public health to use those programs and get those messages out in every tool that we can. Schools, we have some great coverage for schools. We actually have 3 main programs. We partner with the City of Vancouver to run the Student Watershed Monitoring Network. We get about 3,500 students every year that participate. About 300 go to the Watershed Congress every May up at WSU. It's really fun. The kids are really engaged. They go out and monitor their sites right by their schools. It's really cool. We also partner with the Washington Green Schools, where kids can get certified and learn about stormwater on their campus, either through the school grounds, which is a relatively new certification process, or through the water conservation program. So there's two certifications out of 6 through that program where the kids can learn about stormwater and how it works on their campus. And the other one I didn't list here, but we are in year 2 of a partnership with the Port and City of Vancouver to experience Vancouver Lake. It was a big project. The Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership, wonderful regional outreach group, are running that for us. So they take 5th graders from the local schools over to Vancouver Lake, and they learn about watersheds. We get 3 classroom visits to learn about watersheds and what that means. They go out and they shop invasive species. They go on a nature hike looking for the wildlife that live out there, and they talk about the importance of diverse habitat and what that all means in context of having clean water to support a healthy environment. It's really good. Small acreage program has been in existence for quite a while. The WSU Extension Office runs that for us. It basically goes out to the rural property owners who have lots of land. They have pastures. They have manure management issues. They have to deal with septic tank issues. What they can do, because it's a very different set of challenges that they have than we have in the urban system, and they are just experts at running that information. And then the spill kit program is a program we just wrapped up last year based on our conversations about what the gas stations are doing. So those are just some of the examples. And this is just, once again, if you are interested in reading for, I'll leave it over here. It's also online. But we went to the gas stations. That was our targeted audience to measure our understanding. There's 54 gas stations in the Clark County jurisdiction, so that does not include the cities, because they have their own permits that they have to deal with. But of the 54 that we went to, we had about a dozen that are pretty good. They're newer. They have newer standards, so like the new Fred Meyer's up in Hazelbell, the Costco, they have spill kits. I mean, their site looks pretty much like this. They have all the things we want. They have the signs, safety contacts, emergency shutoff pumps, spill kits on site, train staff to know what to do in the event of emergency. We found about a dozen that are very high risk to the, what we call the MS4, the municipal separated stormwater system, because they don't have a lot of the control systems in place, so if somebody drops a hose and it's running, or if the tank is failing, has a leak, and the storm drain is literally from here from you to you, it's in the drain. And that's a problem. Once it's in the drain, then we got a problem. And a lot of the folks didn't even know that they have systems to control those spills built into the system, so they've never been maintained. So if they aren't maintained, they're clogged. It's like, I think Bob probably used the example of adding more to a dirty diaper. You just can't hold anymore. Well, these we learned a lot that some of these systems didn't know they had a problem. Now they are all on alert, and we will go visit them next year. We gave them lots of information how to do it, gave them all the contacts of who they can contact to maintain their systems, get in touch with the owners, because sometimes the owners are different than the operators, different from the staff. So we learned a lot about how to help keep gas stations and fueling stations, because not all of them are staffed. Some of them are commercial, right? They drive up, they pump, and then they go. Nobody would ever know if there's a problem there unless you look in the system to see that there's a spill going on. So what we learned, the main thing is, we have to go talk to them. We have to hold their hands a little bit and go talk to them. Yes, sir?
How do you handle staff turnover and make sure that the owners and the operators are making certain that the staff are staying informed and up to par with respect to their education requirements?
That's a huge issue. Staff in gas stations are very high turnover rate. And when they're hired in, their job is to sell the things that make the money, the pop, the chips, the candy, et cetera. They don't worry so much about the gas because the gas is a huge moneymaker. It's what they sell inside. So when we talk to the owners and operators, we give them information like, this is what you need to know. So make it part of your new hiring policy that you educate them on this information. Not everybody's up to speed yet. Hopefully when we go visit them next year, everybody will have started to take steps to make sure that happens. So it's part of the new hiring process. Is one of the tools that we're helping them figure out. But it was really educational. We have lots of stuff that we learned. Yes, sir?
Is there any community language that you take for those that are using their, are very, very slow dragging their feet or not giving the training? Is there any consequences for those kind of actions in the program?
Yep, so if there is pollution of a certain amount, we are required to notify ecology, and if anybody came in from Franklin and Mill Plain, you'll notice there was a whole lot of stuff in the street. There was a huge spill right up here in the corner of Mill Plain and Franklin today. A truck lost most of his fuel on the corner there, and they just had this huge containment system going out, and then the ecology truck was out there helping with the cleanup stuff. So if it's big enough, we call ecology. They're out on site immediately along with our staff to figure out what it is, how big it is, how far did it get down the system, because we can go down the line. We know exactly where all the lines are. We pop the holes to see how far it got down. But it's ecology's role to enforce the punitive damages if there are some. So they have done that for us on many occasions. We just had a paint spill up in Hazelbell that they are the lead on because it's big enough spill.
Will they write a citation?
I'm not exactly sure all the technical pieces, how they do that, but they can find. They do have the ability to find, whereas we do not. But we have other tools that we use if we need to. But okay. Usually if the spill's big enough, it's their jurisdiction to manage that.
Okay.
But most of the spills are just a few gallons here and there that they hopefully will use their spill kit, contain it, cover it, sweep it up, and dispose of it properly in a hazardous waste container and have an operator, hazardous waste operator, remove that from the site. So we have all the steps that they should take. A lot of them didn't know that. Now they do. Now we're going to go back and see if they remember it. Because the one thing we know about education is you say it again. And after about the eighth time, I think it's kind of a measure, they might start hearing you and understanding how important it is and how easy it is. Because the big one that we learned here, you can say, oh, but don't we want to protect the fish and swimming water to keep our kids safe and all that? No. We want to reduce their costs, we want to reduce their liabilities, and avoid fines. Those are the three messages we learned through this process. Yes, sir?
Just curious, for a, I don't know, for Chevron or whoever has like the smaller places, do they have to have more than just the cashier on site? I mean, if the cashier is the trained person?
No, each business can be run. They all have to get licenses through the state for operating the underground storage tank.
True.
So they're managed technically through the state for that process. Whether it's staffed or not is how they run it.
Like, so they could, I mean, it could be a one-person.
It could be a one-person job, or it could be an no-person job. There's
some. Oh, right. But if they're actually selling, like, the cashier and all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's some that just have a little box, you know, it's no bigger than this, where they sit and sell cigarettes out the window.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
You state that they want to reduce their costs, they want to reduce something else.
They want to reduce their cost, reduce the risk and liabilities, and avoid fines. Those are the three main messages people heard. Protecting the environment, yeah. We actually had some people know exactly. The first question said, do you know what watershed you're in? And we actually had some people know that they were in Santa Cruz or Cruz Creek, which is kind of impressive. So they're starting to hear the message. But environmental protection is not their first priority. So these thoughts. Any other questions on this? Okay, it's available on the website. I've got the report here. I'll leave it over on the counter for you. So real quick, just to wrap up. So when you get to the stormwater, and then you click on what you can do for clean water, this is what the homepage for that outreach education. It gets a few hundred hits a month. And it's got all sorts of programs out there for home use, community use, school information, business information, and property managers, because they're all different audiences with different things that they need to look at. But we have fact sheets, we have links to other agencies that have programs where they can get training. We borrowed some examples like Don't Drip and Drive, which was a huge program, not up in Puget Sound, but it works so well. We use their information. They try to get it out wherever they can. So we are willing to partner with anybody who's developed a good program. We're developing good programs. We have lots of new initiatives for this coming year. So Lots of stuff online, lots of stuff printed in boxes if you need information. We have examples of rain garden booklets if people want to design rain gardens. So some of the new things we have coming real quick for 2012, and I'll turn over to Megan. Like I said, we're going to update our social media. We have a big campaign that we're going to put out on social media, Friends of Trees. We also have a grant for the downspout disconnect. We're going to partner with the Clark Conservation District to help people disconnect in many of the communities where design was to pipe from the roof through the property right up to the street. And in some cases, it's right next to the storm drain. So we want to disconnect those, get those in rain gardens. And then we have a whole new packet of source control brochures that we're going to create that Bob and his team can go out and hand to businesses that will be much more comprehensive than anything we've had, and nobody else is doing in the state, so we're going to become the first kind of new marketing technique for the businesses. So that's a quick overview of what we do and why we do it. Unless there's any other questions, I'll turn it over to Megan, because she's got a really fun presentation. And that's what it's going to be. Bye, Blake.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you. Yeah. Yep. Just your turn. Hello. As James introduced me, I'm Megan. I work with Friends of Tree. And the reason I wanted to come and talk to all of you is kind of as James alluded to, we have a new partnership with Clark County, specifically with the Clean Water Division, through a grant from the Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board, which is a long title. So I kind of wanted to just come to talk a little bit about why we're doing this grant, the benefits, but more to just familiarize everyone with who Friends of Trees is and what our program is. Hoping that you guys can also, kind of in line with what Jane is saying, help with the outreach and education so we can kind of get the word out into Clark County that we're now going to be offering this program, and specifically for this first year of the pilot project, Salida, North Salmon Creek, and West Eagle. So I'll get into that. But to start, Friends of Trees, a little bit of fun background. We were founded in 1989 by this gentleman. Look at the photo evidence right there. To help. And what we do is we are a nonprofit that it's our mission to bring people together to plant and care for city trees and restore green spaces in the Pacific Northwest. That's kind of overall what we do. We like to joke that our executive director kind of wants to conquer the Pacific Northwest. That's his goal, is planting trees everywhere. And kind of in the why we plant trees, I always just think these are a fun visual. Kind of like that's exactly that same house. Look at that. A little bit further on, we often use this image to really be like, look at over the scale of time, really, the differences it makes to that street stage there. But to kind of get into the why in a bit with the stormwater benefits, because that's kind of the most relevant part to this audience. What do they do? Why are they beneficial for stormwater? But in general, they increase the interception of rainfall. They reduce, thereby kind of reducing high stormwater flows. They also increase our infiltration capacity, which makes, they have the ability to uptake more water, help us minimize erosion, they increase our carbon sequestration, and improve our air quality.
What does that mean, carbon sequestration?
So carbon that's in the air, they're able to
take carbon dioxide?
Yep, carbon, they're taking it into it and kind of breathing it back out as oxygen.
Okay, so
This is a terribly blurry image, but I put it in there anyway because it's still cool, because really all you're trying to see is the colors in that. So trees also produce the urban heat island effect. And what that more or less means, and this is an image from Portland to show it as an example, is in cities, and in the downtown really hardscape city centers, including in Vancouver, it's a lot hotter. You have sun coming down, it's reflecting off buildings, it's reflecting off pavement, etc. So it makes it a lot hotter. As you can kind of see in the image on the right, it's kind of showing your temperatures. In those downtown urban cores, it gets a lot hotter. Now, if people are familiar with Portland, right up along the river, heavy industrial areas. Also, along where the Willamette is, heavy industrial areas. Next to it, Forest Park. This is showing you temperature range, where the blue is the cooler temperatures, the red is that more hardscape temperature. So it's really just showing where there's a ton of trees, it's cooler. where there's not, it's a lot hotter, you know, and so trees really do help where they are with preventing island effects. And Kansas Trees actually have a new grant where they're going to be going into some of those industrial areas in Portland to try to help mitigate some of that urban heat island effect. Additionally, kind of on the more neighborhood side of things, there's actually a lot of interesting research that has come out of the University of Washington. There's a researcher out there doing it, really showing how green streets actually have lowered crime rates. And you can get into a lot of it. It actually does show increase in money into local business districts, et cetera. There's some really interesting research in all of this. But also, they beautify our neighborhoods, they unify neighborhoods, and specifically with the Friends of Trees model and kind of the benefit that we really bring in what we do is they help neighbors meet each other, and it's really the power of our program and kind of more what I'm going to be talking about here. So in that, what do we do as Friends of Trees? Clearly we plant trees, but our kind of whole motto is that we plant trees together. We're trying to bring people together by planting trees. So it's just as much about the relationship built through the experience as it is about the trees themselves. So we really kind of believe that we do with what we do. And we do have, you know, kind of two big programs. The program that we offer in Southwest Washington and the one that we will be partnering with Clark County on is our Neighborhood Trees program. And this program is one where we're working to get more trees planted, improve the health of the community by planting trees with volunteers and neighbors in neighborhood, at people's homes, at local businesses. To kind of use our closest corollary, which is Vancouver, because this is a new project for Clark County, through the what is called, known as the Friends of Trees effect, we have increased the tree on the public right-of-way tree canopy in Vancouver by 121% in 10 years. That's really great. We are planting for public right-of-way significantly. However, the tree canopy in the city of Vancouver is 18.6%. And the city of Vancouver has a goal to get to 28% by 2030. It is deemed that a healthy Pacific Northwest city has a 40% tree canopy cover. So we have a ways to go, and we're striving to get there. And Friends of Trees is helping that happen. And just a little background to know about the work that we have already been doing in Southwest Washington. We've been planting in Vancouver within the city limits since 2003, so for quite some time. We have four annual neighborhood plantings in Vancouver, and the Clark County planting will be our fifth planting. It'll be in April, and I will hand out a flyer at the end. And last year, as part of this program, we planted 565 trees in the city of Vancouver with the help of over 500 volunteers that came out as part of our program. And to kind of talk about, so how does all of this relate to Clark County? So we are launching this pilot project. As I mentioned earlier, the pilot project to kind of get it feet off the ground will be focused on planting trees at people's street trees, at people's homes in, as I said, Paleta, North Santa Creek, and West Hazeldale. And the kind of the goal of the project, the goal also of Clark County and the Clean Water Division through the project, is to increase the overall forest canopy by increasing trees in neighborhoods, specifically street trees. That is what we will be planting, trees along the street. And that thereby is an increase to, you know, the trees that are in the Cougar Creek watershed and the lower reach of the Santa Creek watershed. This is just kind of reiterating what we talked about earlier with the benefit specific more to stormwater, that it there's all these studies out there that are showing that, you know, urban tree canopy does help with the rainwater interception, with evapotranspiration, with that kind of increased infiltration capacity, that it both addresses kind of stream hydrology through this, but also water quality, in that by planting these trees in these upland areas, that you do see these immediate impacts as a result of it. But also in kind of that extra added that Friends of Trees provides, but also speaking again to some of Jane's goals, we really are trying to work on the stewardship side of things, and that's kind of this extra side that Friends of Trees offers. Because you could have contractors go out and plant a bunch of trees, but what we're trying to do is engage the community while we do that so they have more ownership over the work that we do. So they care about that tree that has been planted in front of their home and that they're going to talk to their neighbors about it. And so through that process, we're working to engage those residents, those homeowners, those neighbors, with neighbors and the neighborhood writ large. We want to teach them about the value of the watershed, the value of trees, and we want them engaged both in their neighborhood as part of the planting, but also as an ongoing piece of that. And so the next kind of thing I just want to leave you a little bit about is how the process works. So when people, when you're telling people, oh, friends of trees, they're like, but how does that work? Because it is a bit of an involved process. And I will call out one person in this room who is Erica Johnson, who's the back. Erica works with Clark County Master Gardeners, and she's a very dedicated friends of trees volunteer, and so I just have to recognize her for that commitment. So how it starts with our program is through some means of outreach, and we do a lot of different types of outreach, homeowners sign up with us to get a potentially a discounted tree. So we find out they signed up with us to get a street tree. The next thing that happens is Friends of Trees staff go out to complete inspections at that property, following kind of municipality standards of spacing for particular infrastructure such as driveways, intersection signs, light posts, water meters, etc. And so we mark for trees, and then after that we are able to go back to the homeowner, typically through our online system, and say, okay, these are the trees that are appropriate, this is due to your spacing, how many trees you can now have. They get an email, and they can literally go into our online system and shop for trees, just like you're shopping for anything. And then, as the reason I called out Erica, is we have volunteers that are dedicated volunteers, and what they're called is neighborhood coordinators. These are people that live in the neighborhood where we are planting trees, and they help us do this work by getting out the work. They reach out to local businesses to solicit donations for donuts, for instance, to help feed our planters, or pizza, or, you know, soup. They also will go and sometimes knock on doors to help do that additional outreach. But also they follow up and say, I see that you signed up to get a tree, but you haven't ordered yet. Oh, you want to get that beautiful tree in your yard or along the street? They do that. And they also help us recruit additional volunteers so we have enough people on planting day to get those trees planted. And then, so clearly that homeowner is really excited. We're bringing this project to Clark County. They just got a call from a neighborhood coordinator. They're going to go and they're going to see their selection of trees and they're going to order and have a beautiful tree planted along the street. And then on planting day, we have a program where people get trained with us as crew leaders. So they literally have been trained in how you properly plant trees. And also how you teach other people to do that program. And they go out in all of the general community that has showed up, often the people that are getting trees themselves, as well as other people in the community. They go out and they help them plant trees. Typically, each crew has about 10 trees, and they go to about 5 different houses and actually plant those trees at those houses. And so the final thing I wanted you guys to see, so that all of you are going to mark your calendar for Saturday, April 8th, and you're going to come out and help us plant trees. I wanted to show you what planting day looks like with all those trees we just planted, so you kind of know what it would look like. So how it starts, we all that are staff and are dedicated volunteers come out really early. The trees have already all been dropped off. We arrange them all in the parking lot by which crew is going to take them, and then the lovely volunteers inside are setting up registration, they're setting up the breakfast that we provide to everyone. And then our crew leaders that I talked about earlier show up, as well as our truck drivers. We're always asking for people that have trucks to help show up day of. Let us know in advance because we load the trees into their truck and they actually drive them to the different sites. And then about 8:45 a.m., our general volunteers show up to say, hey, I'm here for the tree. I don't really know what I'm doing. And we say, no problem. We'll talk about it. And then outside, our crew leaders all huddle together and we kind of give them any information. Maybe something came out, maybe some certain tree had come, or we want to remind them how to, you know, do a particular thing. So we do that. And then about 9 a.m., we have a lovely speech by staff to kind of say, so you're all here, you maybe don't know what's about to happen. Let's tell you what's about to happen. But we also, this is an educational moment, we talk to them about why we do what we do, what's the benefit of watershed, what's the benefit of trees. And sometimes, for instance, in this one, you can see we had two city council members in Vancouver. They come and speak. They can talk the importance of it. Our dedicated volunteers will come up and speak as well. And then we said, go plant some trees. So everybody goes out, they meet their crew. The crew, if they haven't already, gets their tree loaded up. They go out and they plant those trees. And that was the best part of the share. Look how happy they are. And then at the end, this is also a really fun part. People come back, we offer a potluck. A lot of the homeowners that are getting trees, they may not be able to help plant that tree, so we ask them to donate food. So they actually donate food to feed our planters. We also ask businesses to donate those lunch items that our dedicated volunteers acquired. And I always just have to share this thing. It's my favorite thing about planting trees. You go out to a planting in the morning, nobody knows anyone, they're all anxious, they have no idea what's going on. They go out for 3 hours, they come back, and they literally all sit together and eat lunch together. It's one of my favorite parts. You watch it, all those crews that come, they like, they just built a friendship, you know, over the course of those 3 hours. It's really great. And then you have these wonderful trees that were there previously. And then the final piece is after the planting, we actually do another training where we train another set of volunteers to actually go out and check on the trees. So they go out, they collect data, they actually send it back to some of the tree staff, but they also knock on the door and talk to the homeowners about how their trees are doing. They do this twice over the course of the summer, and then they leave them a little report card on their door, thumbs up, thumbs down, saying, hey, remember to mulch, or hey, you need to water, and all of those things, because we really know that people need those additional touches over time. That's it, on the trees.
I got a question.
Yeah?
Who owns that tree? Is it owned by...
So, in largely in the Pacific Northwest, we have kind of a shared model where that tree is technically within public right-of-way, but it is maintained by the homeowner, but in essence owned by the municipality.
And what if the homeowner sells their house for their property? The new homeowner doesn't like that tree.
Well, and Jane can probably speak better to it. In Clark County, the regulations are different than they are in the city of Vancouver. So in Clark County, my understanding is they could remove the tree. In the city of Vancouver, you would actually be required to have a permit to remove it that has to be approved by a city tree inspector, and they may or may not approve the removal of that tree.
And or it depends on the HOA association too, like where I live, I can't remove a tree without, I have to swap it,
yeah.
But you have to get permission.
So there's different regulations.
Are there size requirements for that? Or
for the replacement tree?
No, for it. You're a homeowner.
Uh-huh.
You want to remove the tree. It's only 10 feet tall. Is there a size requirement? Or
it's
if
not,
it's,
we don't. So
you know, like,
or do you want me to speak to Clark County or do you want me to speak to me?
Either way, but
okay.
Either way, but you know, I mean, it's a bigger deal to remove a 40-foot tall tree than it is to move remove a 10-foot tall tree.
Right. So it's not based on, at least within the city of Vancouver, it's not based on size. It's based on the size of the planting strip or the size of that site, and that's one note that I'll also, I'm going to sidebar and come back to that. So there's trees that are approved based on what is a 4-foot area, a 6-foot area, an 8-foot area, a yard. So you're going to see a scale up in that. And the rationale for that is a smaller planting strip, you're typically going to have smaller form trees for various reasons because you have a smaller area, so you don't want the rooting issues that you could have happen. You want to have a smaller canopy so you're not going to have the clearance issues, et cetera. So we don't do things based on height because height is a hard thing in and of itself to measure. Sometimes trees don't reach that at maturity, but we do kind of a basis of overall, you know, what is that tree's potential, what is its rooting issues, how, you know, how drought tolerant is, and then they're approved by those kind of planting standards for a site.
And just real quick, in urban unincorporated Clark County, we do not have the tree protection,
right,
tree permit requirements that the city has. Our newer development programs, including the new low-impact development requirements, do have standards to put in street trees. So when you see like new developments up in Handelbell, we see the street trees going. But we don't have enforcement to protect those trees if, say, 10 years down the road someone wants to remove them. We don't have the protection measures after the fact like what the city does. So that's one tool that we may look at in the future as we move forward with this kind of program with the pilot project, say, okay, we're finding this down in the Queen Street region, maybe we need to take the next step of the jurisdiction and have the tree permit program in place. But we're not there yet.
I got one more question. If I bought a house and I moved here from Atlanta or something like that, and there's this house in Manhattan City, how would I know that I was supposed to have a permit to remove that tree or do anything like that? How would I know that?
You have to know if you live within the city limits or not. And a lot of folks call it city that they live in the city of Vancouver when they're actually living in Clark County. So calling one of the jurisdictions, they can direct you as to what jurisdiction you live in and therefore what rules apply. So if you're in the city of Vancouver, they have a great urban forestry program that can help you understand what those requirements are.
I mean, how would I know it even? If I move from a place where there was no restrictions, no protections, I can just cut it through whatever I want to move in here, what would trigger that? Make a phone call rather than just take it out.
Well, that a lot of people don't know that, and usually if they decide to take something out, like you mentioned, if you're in a homeowners association where they have very strict rules about their landscaping, usually the HOA will contact you rather quickly to tell you, or a neighbor might call and say, hey, I saw my neighbor cutting down a tree, and say, well, you're in Clark County, we don't have rules for protecting those trees, et cetera, et cetera. So the jurisdiction can help.
Okay. I would imagine if you were going to hire a tree removal company, they would know for sure.
Some of them, they're a reputable company. There are a lot of companies that don't. The city of Vancouver at least does a lot of outreach to those companies to notify them that it is required, that that should be your first line.
But if I'm in a homeowners association, the homeowners have a guide.
Yeah.
So I could, read that, but if I didn't look at the Homeowners Association, how would I know?
Hey, when you cut it down, they come out and give you a big body.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And in Clark County, like up in Hansville, there's no HOAs like, by 68th Street, 78th Street, et cetera. So people can remove trees, and if they're curious, they can call us and ask us what the rules and regulations are. But usually it's somebody, neighbor who's upset that somebody cut something down. We get those calls every week. So we do the wetlands and we cut down the trees. We get those calls every week. And we have staff who answer those calls.
I have a question. So the intention is that the trees be planted principally in median strips that are in public right-of-ways?
No, and that was the side note I wanted to make. So I want to clarify what a street tree is, because this is it's super confusing to a lot of people. So a street tree often are thought of as you have your curb, that planting strip, the sidewalk, and then the yard, right? That's often how we know of it. Those are street trees. However, most yards, I'm going to use air quotes for this, have public right-of-way, whether or not they have a sidewalk. So if you have a home and it's the street, you have a curb, and then suddenly it's the yard, upwards of 10, 12 feet of that front of that yard is public right-of-way. Additionally, if you have a curb, the sidewalk, and then yard, probably 6 feet of that is actually public right-of-way, right behind that sidewalk. If you don't have a curb, you don't have a sidewalk, you might even have more public right-of-way. So the trees that we're talking about through the Clark County project are those public right-of-way trees, the trees that are on a homeowner business's public right-of-way area. So the main way I like to say is it's the trees right along the street, whether or not there's a planting strip. And I have a fun visual that I'm creating to help convey this to people, because oftentimes people think their yard is literally all the way up to the curb, but in fact that front area is typically.
So, but if I as a homeowner want to plant some trees, if I contacted your organization and it wasn't within that right-of-way area,
right,
you would just tell me to go talk to the nursery or something like that?
I would, at this time. And it's part of it, we are being funded for specifically for stormwater mitigation. We do offer yard trees through, in infancy and Vancouver, we plant them. And at some point, we'll get there, but we're really trying to go out hard with the public right-of-way trees, because we really are there in the hopes of doing stormwater benefits. And so that's what we do. But then it's a great way for us to say, hey, check out this great local nursery. And then people realize that trees are really expensive, and then they go, hey, maybe I actually
So which leads me to the question, they obviously the homeowner purchases the tree at a discount.
Yep. And that tree is $35. So we sell our trees at $35 plus tax. And typically those trees are going to be about 6 to 12 feet tall when they arrive. So they're pretty substantially sized trees.
And that would compare if I went to a local nursery for an equivalent tree, equivalent size.
It's going to range from $100 to $300. And I wanted to wait until you were all convinced that you wanted to spread the word to do my handout, so then you'll take them. So I have two different ones and one is kind of actually talking about them. So. All right. Thank you.
What questions did we not ask?
So it's the homeowner that chooses. How many varieties or varietals are there to choose from?
It really depends on what your kind of site is and what it is. We source all of our trees from local nurseries, most of them in the Moraine, Oregon area, where they're literally either working in the containers to leave up, or they're literally digging them out of the ground right before we plant them. Right now, if you were to sign up with us and get approved, depending upon what site you have, you could have a selection of 10 to 20 trees available to you. We do sell out. That's the whole thing. We can actually make the trees grow faster. And so we work in advance to secure the trees with the nurseries, and then we get confirmed numbers, and that's what goes into our system. So once we sell out of our, this magnolia tree for the season, we're sold out there. But the homeowner does get to choose what
trees. So how many times a year do you do this?
We plant in each neighborhood once a year.
Once a year. So this is the April date.
Yes, the April. And then in future years, we would be having two plantings.
So what's the cutoff date for somebody to
actually arrive? On the paper, it's March 6th, I believe.
13th.
Okay, I'm off by a week. That's it. But everything is, the main thing is because of our program, we are taking a lot of volunteer power to make it happen. Also, we only plant during that kind of fall into winter, early springtime. It's the best time to plant trees. Trees are in dormancy at that time, so they're not putting their energy into root growth or actually leaf production, fruit production. So we plant during the rainy season.
I have 15 dwarf fruit trees. And I
showed work.
And I had a master gardener come out and show me how to train.
One last question. Yeah. If you have a tree in a nursery that costs $300,
mm-hmm.
and through your program, they get it for $35, what is the rest of it?
So it comes from like the grant, for instance, that we have with Clark County. So
okay.
Clark County has a grant, which we are kind of the subcontractors on. We implement the program. So they actually, yeah, they pay for the cost of the tree. So really, the homeowner is getting the completely subsidized cost as kind of an incentive to encourage them to engage. They often don't realize how subsidized the cost is.
Any other questions?
And my info is on that sheet. So if in your spreading it around you want to reach out to me at any point, I am so happy to talk to you about trees. it's my favorite thing to do. So please reach out to me if you have additional questions.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on. Looks like the next item on our agenda is the update of bylaws. Mark, would you like to?
Sure. Yeah. So everybody has copies, right?
Yeah.
We went through most of the changes last meeting, and there was some question about whether we wanted to maintain an appendix to it with the list of board members with their responsibilities and the terms, and so we talked about the modifying the draft changes to eliminate the appendix, and we needed to add language to section 4C that talked about the staggered expiration dates around the terms that we have, right? Because that's really what the value of the table the appendix added to the bylaws. So, do I need to read this?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. The
proposed change.
Yeah, the proposed change is that the again, we're in 4C, and it just says the expiration dates of member terms occurs on the 31st of December. Commissioner terms are staggered such that 3 of the 9 members' terms expire each year. Term expiration dates are listed on the commissioner's meeting minutes and at the website. And then I think the other change was we eliminated the reference to Appendix A, and later in the
later document removal of attachment A.
Yeah.
And it's expired.
Exactly.
And you had one other item, changes to wording correction under 4B.
Tommy, I added a hyphen. Right. It should be a hyphen 3 years. So that's it.
So at the last meeting, we reviewed the potential changes. Mark said he'd come back with some final revisions of wording. So let's open for discussion or comment.
Mark, did you also discuss the header there when you talked about the Department of Environmental Services, cost out the public works, and change the date?
We did, and one change that I think I would like to make, is this, when we last did this, was July 31st, and so we need to update the, to your point, the blue there where it says July 31st should say now November 2nd, as we make that change. Everything in blue was reviewed last.
Yeah, I thought so.
It was really just to eliminate reference to the Department of Environmental Services to the public works. And then we changed the website in section 8.
That's
8F.
Yeah, right. Any other comments? Yeah. Do I hear a motion to accept the amendments?
I think I'm subscribed.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing no opposition. And the changes pass 7-0 in violence. This will be implemented. Okay. Next item on the agenda. Thanks for doing that. Is discussion 3 of our efforts or starting efforts for the annual program?
Since we meet again, we need to have it at the end of December and holidays. So I will start working on it in 2 weeks after I'm on Google Docs.
So the objective would be to attempt at the January meeting to review the document, see if there are any other changes, refinements, tuning that needs to be done. As a reminder, in the past, the tendency has been to share the annual report with the Clark County counselors. That the earliest opportunity was generally has moved to the February time frame. We'd look for February, perhaps even into March, so that at that time the chair and the vice chair would present the report to the chair of the county councilors, deciding to show up for the meeting, which has varied in the past. So is that a time frame acceptable? We will put it on the commissioner Google Docs opportunity.
I take the minutes every week that people have been doing, that there's markings that
that flowing working document. So everybody will be notified when the document is placed in the repository. And we'll ask you to try within 2 weeks of receiving that to take a look at it and make your comments. At least we'll get the first initial go around. And we did such a fabulous job last time. I don't remember that there were a lot of changes. It will be probably zero changes. Well, so
continuous improvement.
Any other questions about the preparation or discussion of the annual report? No? All right, then let's close that item and move on. So at our last meeting, we talked, Commissioner Schaefer raised the question of how can we do a better job moving forward. Continual question of reaching out to the public and increasing the awareness in general of the program and the efforts, etc. And certainly we've had an approach this year with the team reaching out and giving some presentations. But what we discussed at the last meeting was at this meeting we would sort of open things up and maybe just do a little brainstorming and see if we can identify some other ways that we could go about reaching out to the community. So I'd like to sort of open a brainstorming session and see if anybody has any particular thoughts or suggestions.
I have a question. You know, we moved from Department of Environmental Science or
Services.
Yeah, services. To now being part of Public
Works.
And I don't know what all the public work does. I mean, maybe I should take a little more time and look at, you know, on the internet what they have to say. But I don't know if we're overlapping some of the people or we're just gapping, you know. Hopefully we're all here to first priority serve the public, and that we have gapping or we have overlapping. I think we need to find out whether or not, you know, how we discover whether, you know, what our new mission, if it's changed in the eyes of the management or the counselors, how we can determine that we are fitting in such a way that we maximize our service to the public and simplify, you know, any confusion or overlapping that might be a part of the counselors and make sure we have a clean chart.
I would make a suggestion in that we certainly need to do that. I would suggest, though, that we take our opportunity to brainstorm and not necessarily worry about that and just come up with some suggestions and ideas that we can then overlay as we start to follow up on that.
So let me call your attention to the larger paragraph on page 3 below commission discussion time. Last month, I suggested or proposed that we ask Dean Benning to see if there's budget to allow us, as the communications team, to go out and give presentations in the community to try to educate people in various sectors of the community, whether it's at Cascade Library or Battle Ground Library or other facilities. And we're kind of doing some overlap with the education efforts that are being undertaken by the county, as we learned about a little bit earlier this evening, and which I'm really pleased about. Our time frames would probably be later in the evenings and trying to get the word out to folks, and we'd like to partner with you to be able to accomplish some of those educational opportunities for the people in the community so that they know the importance of cleaning up their dog waste, picking it up if they're going to take their dog for a walk, being selective about the kinds of fertilizers or chemicals that they might put on their rooftops or on their lawns. And so that's a brainstorming idea that's out there. Dean's not here to do the answer to that at the moment, but but I'd like to reiterate that that is something that we probably would like to make some effort towards.
I also think on our walkthrough, when we did our stormwater walkthrough, that's when we found out that there's 400 meetings a year or something that he has with different neighborhoods, that that would be an excellent opportunity for us to attend, or at least a portion of them. 400 might be too many, but that looks like a good opportunity to reach out.
You said he'd love to help, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's excellent. From last year, we had very little to no outreach. This year, we have a growing momentum of outreach, which is great. And I think there's, it seems like there's so many opportunities for us to connect with so many groups across the board to help education. I'm not sure if budget would absolutely be necessary, but I definitely see what you're saying there. But it seems like we can definitely work better to connect with more and to get out there, and that's really awesome.
Yeah, that's like that. That's an audience you automatically have. And sometimes the challenge is with, even if you made it a group hub, it's hard to even get people to necessarily show up for that. But if you're going to a neighborhood that they already have a meeting at, they
yeah,
want the education.
Alone, I feel like it's very hard to get the audience. I mean, we have this here for public commenting, and this is, I think, the biggest turnout, or one of the biggest turnouts, which is fantastic. However, that being said, we'll probably get more momentum if we connect with people. Plus, we just have that backing.
I'd like to get as many ideas on the table, whether they're already being done or not. Just, I don't really want to contaminate the process. It's not that I don't care what's being done, but maybe we'll catch something in our thoughts that they aren't doing. And if we worry about just what they've already been doing, we're trying to fill it. I've got a big brainstorming fan of, like, don't worry about what's being done. You know, what do you think you maybe should do? And then maybe there's a pearl of wisdom or two.
I think the first step, sorry.
Oh, well, good. I don't think we can overdo it. So,
okay.
I think you guys can absolutely wonderful. So keep going.
I think just for starters, and this is just a process thing, is if we could just start a list of people we would like to connect to as a goal for the next year, that might be good.
Well, I
am making notes as well.
I think the overlap is really interesting. The organization in the county is reaching out predominantly to businesses and schools, and I think one of the things that we can try to do is to focus our outreach on homeowners and individuals that are not necessarily touched in the business or school communities.
Yeah, the general public.
The general public.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think there's also other opportunities also. I know for instance, Clark Public Utilities has a program where they go into the watersheds and they clean up trash, they remove noxious weeds and things like that. And that's, you know, the watersheds are one of our interests. And so finding those types of people who are also doing work in the, in the same thing, the watersheds and the storm runoff and things like that, or it's a lot of the neighborhoods not getting sewers where they never got before, and what might be the impact, for instance, a leak or things like that that goes into the stormwater drains. So I think there's plenty of opportunity to do that, to find out what these people are doing and what the charter is, and figure out how we might have a synergistic relationship with them to do that. I think it would be not only fruitful for us, but it would be a good thing to the public.
I made a few scribbled notes while your presentation was going on. I was writing just things that were popping into my head, and they're probably already being done. But things that just popped into my head. So even though we're dealing with principally unincorporated part of the county, not necessarily the cities, but just brainstorming. Is there any value in reaching out to the city councils, particularly in the rural areas, the battleground city council, the Hill City Council, maybe they're already doing that? But
yeah. So the cities are under what's called a phase two permit. We're phase one because we're a big jurisdiction. They're under phase two, and their requirements will be changing very, very soon. And so they will start to see a palette of requirements for audiences and messages similar to us. So going to the cities is
is perfectly reasonable because they have a lot of legitimate requirements and they have less staff resources. They might have one or two people to deal with stormwater and that's it. And they have to do plan interviews and engineering and outreach and the whole palette, whereas we have a board for staff. So that would be, I'm sure they would greatly appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
School boards. I was at the background of school board. I attend their meetings on a regular basis. And so I actually got up for 2 minutes in front of the background of school board, and there was a brief mention of the Green Schools. And I got up and commented that, well, Vancouver School District does an outstanding job, and Evergreen does a little. After that, it falls off the cliff. And so I actually admonished the background school board and the superintendent for not making better use of the Green Schools program. I'm not, they don't really care for me that much, but that's okay. I just enhanced that. and actually suggested to them that they should look a little bit more closely, especially if they wanted to save a little money with the county. And it got a sort of a few nods, but that struck me as, you know, maybe again one of those opportunities, because those meetings are always on a scheduled basis on a Monday or a Tuesday or Wednesday every second or third week, etc. So I'm sure that an outreach effort could get the school boards and thus get the school districts, and maybe not so much in Vancouver Evergreen, but again maybe some of the rural ones, and there are a number. Well, not that for this, but
just for the target audience for the general public, you talked about the, like, the Echo Fairs.
Yeah.
Well, the safety fairs they have at the Hazelbelt Fire Station and the fairgrounds, there's all kinds of booths, and I was there representing something else, but there was nothing there. I was sort of waiting on. And you get the little kids coming in, and you get something to hand out to them, and some pictures, and, you know, I was handing out these kids, and it's amazing how many people are really interested in just a little person hand out. So, again, a good target audience for general public.
Okay. Safety fairs, guys. David.
I was just going to say maybe there's a way that we can partner with your group here and help in those efforts at the eco fairs or at the safety fairs, where if you're having a hard time finding, you know, warm bodies to get out there and talk to people, well, we're used to getting out there and talking to people specifically about this subject matter, and it may be worthwhile to kind of try to work together to feed that need.
That would be great. Some of those larger events, like the Eagle Fair, you know, they have thousands of people. So it's what we try to do is engage the kids with a craft item that's going to take them 2 or 3 minutes, and grab a parent and give them a quick elevator speech. Because Sand Creek's right back here, where's it? I've never seen it before. We're about 50 feet from it, and so you try to get parents to speak, the kids all excited. Well, do you know there's turtles? If you love turtles, there's about a quarter of a mile down the trail. Really? So you get the kids excited about, no, we want to see the turtles or the otters. Great, take mom and dad, and gave them a speech about why it's important. So having help with those, because there's such a high volume going through, any help is greatly appreciated.
In that light of that, I think it would be really great to put an effort in the first 3 months of next year if you can actually train the rest of us or whoever you need to in our study on how you guys have done. And that way we'll prepare for it.
One other sort of question is, and you have to do this again as well, is there anywhere that there's a list of pet groups or organizations in Clark County? I know PAWS, my wife takes our mini Aussie up to a park down near the Battleground School District offices, all the way being Screech and some of the others. And so forth, but dog paws, that was called. So I'm not sure, I honestly don't know if, how many different sort of pet groups or organizations that might have some sort of regular meeting. Maybe you're already in touch with them on a regular basis.
We need help. We've been short of staff to update that list, and actually we'll hire a new staff person in about a month or so, and that's one of the first tasks is to get a current list of those organizations. But it's a big task. There's lots of groups out there, and they have regular scheduled meetings. Dog Park has a huge membership, and going to the dog park, even staying at the dog park on a nice Saturday, where you can be at the gate and say, hey, welcome to the park. Don't forget to pick up a bag, pick up a pet waste, and this is why. That being going out to where the people are is the most effective tool. We go out to the neighborhood, that's why stewardship with Friends of Trees is working in the neighborhood. So being out at the dog parks is probably one of the best ways to engage.
So is there a relationship with the Southwest Washington Humane Society effort at all?
There has been in the past. It's lacking a little bit last couple years.
I have an inside. My daughter runs the dog program for Southwest Washington.
Great.
So there's certainly an opportunity for a connection there. But that's why I'm just thinking the whole sort of pets thing from pet waste to its effort. And you're already doing re-outreach business groups. So I guess there's sort of just a general question of, are there other sort of groups or organizations where there is or could be or should be a tie?
Well, related to that, if I could, we go to individual businesses, and we do have to get every business, and there's like 1,200 or whatever in our jurisdiction. There are organizations, like I know in Vancouver, there's the Uptown Business Association. We don't go to those meetings, but if you want to go to any of those local business association meetings where those, Hazel Dell, Northern Creek has one, go to those meetings and say, hey, you all have businesses here. We'll have a new palette of brochures that you'll be able to hand out by next April. It'll be this really beautiful suite of brochures that you can take and go to those meetings if you're so interested. That would be fantastic.
You get your local Rotaries.
Yeah.
You've got, other businesses. So I was actually just sort of assuming that's the scary thing about assumptions, right? Well, I'm not describing, but assuming.
We know.
But if you don't have a list, or there's a list that we can update, or maybe we can help in creating a list of sort of business groups, associations, where there might be this sort of possibility of a tie. If you get to some of the Rotary and the other groups that like to do public service support as well, then maybe there's a connection.
So then it sounds like we need to circle back to that in February?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right now, because it's just me.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of organizations.
Yeah.
So I try to do what I can, but any and all forces to get the word out as often as possible.
Yeah.
When Marie and I went to the Green Drinks group, we had a conversation with them. There was a gentleman that was an owner of hardware nursery type store. And he specifically talked about some of the chemical products that they sell to their customers. And I'm thinking it may be worthwhile to reach out to those businesses specifically and target the issues of the kinds of chemicals being used for fertilizers or for rooftop moss control, that kind of thing. And, give them some information. Maybe if we have a special flyer specific to that, they could even post it someplace. And there must be a couple dozen of those kinds of businesses throughout the entirety of the town.
Okay. Well, I know that Lowe's and Home Depot and Shorty's and Mystery and other places hold individual, opportunities and things like that, but they also do, planting, caring for, and how to prepare, roots and things like that. They also talk about, because I've seen the signs and the seminar that they have there. And maybe that is something we can also do, is contact those people who put on these seminars and have them talk about,
I just made a note because the low home people type of thing, right? You see the board. We're going to have this or whatever else like that, and maybe there is an opportunity.
And whoever schedules those events will be a good contact for us to find out when we can come in.
And there's only a few of those, so those will be relatively easier to reach out to.
Yeah.
Well, there's the Ace Hardware, there's the Park Rose, there's Shorty's, there's probably a couple dozen.
And there's probably one person in each one of the organizations that schedules those events.
So here's what I have. I've written in the way of notes for the starting shopping list. And or delete as we go through. I'll just run through them real quickly. So, understand what the county wants and is doing. So, we've gotten a touch on earlier this evening. Question about is there a budget or could there be some sort of a budget for outreach and efforts and so forth? Neighborhood associations, homeowners and other individuals, safety fairs, school boards, city councils, cooperative efforts with public works where even we can be sort of an extra set of hands if they need somebody to fill in based on scheduling and timely availability. Possibility of pet groups, Rotary, and other business associations type of list, and or businesses that sell services or products related with providing hardware stores, big box stores, et cetera. That's sort of a shopping list. Did I miss anything?
That's what I've got, too.
And I'll give this to you.
Okay, thank you.
Do you think it would be worthwhile to put on that list dealers deal in small, relatively small to medium gardener, farm equipment, whether, you know, they're planting or they're fertilizing or they're doing other things, if they're holding any kind of, or figuring out if we have information we could pass on to them that would help people who are buying these rototillers and these other small equipment.
Would those tend to come through the hardware stores, the big box stores?
Well, some cases they would, but they also have small car equipment dealers here too.
I'm thinking, are you thinking like Wilco?
Well, Wilco is certainly one of them. But I know there's also, you know, small repair facilities and things like that. They not only repair, but they also deal in new equipment and things like that.
The only challenge I would see with that is I think when you get into very small operations where there's just a person or just a couple of people, these really small ones, we're probably getting to the gas station type of situation where...
Normally those people are repair only.
Yeah.
You know, they're not...
Yeah, but I wonder if they would, and I don't know if I'm not saying no, I'm just wondering if they would really actually have any of the interest because they're doing the repair, they're just trying to keep their head above
water. Yeah, no, I agree that those... But somebody who's, you know, selling
some larger volume,
small competing equipment that a homeowner or a farm owner or something like that would handle, and you know, maybe they might even be willing for us to put up a seminar for those people coming in and telling them so that they can, you know, make better use of their equipment and better use of the environment.
We got it down.
And another group, I don't know how we'd reach them, is you still have all the lawn service group.
The what?
The lawn service companies, right? They can be monobob or they can be 10 people. Yeah, all of them. Yeah. I don't even know how you'd reach them, but that's another group.
The phone book has them.
It's true.
You could Google them.
We actually did have an intern create a list because all the larger companies, like Distinctive Landscape and all the tree services, they're pretty hip to the message and they're pretty responsible, but there's so many mobile businesses that don't have a permanent location. It's just a guy or two in a truck.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the folks we need to reach, and they're the ones who don't have their information out unless you see the side of the truck.
Uh-huh.
So they don't have websites, they don't have emails, it's just the guys in the truck.
I mean, we could even take those and send them an invitation to a meeting, and or we have specifically that on the agenda.
I would guess if they are that itinerant, that their interest level in doing is probably on the lower side. But there's certainly.
But those are the folks that are fertilizing improperly and sweeping stuff into storm drains and dumping on county properties. We have a commercial landscaper that we're trying to catch. We know it's a commercial because the leaves are dumping our red oaks, and there's no red oaks in the neighborhood. So we know if somebody come in, it's consistently dumping yard waste. And so we put the neighbors on alert, and if you see a truck, write down the name. And so it's hit and miss. But those are folks we really do need to catch, because those are the ones who are not educated on.
Here's wireless stormwater cameras. No. Yes. We're tracking. No. Okay. All right. Any other thoughts or questions? Actually, it's a good list.
You know, the only thing I would add, it seems like everything that's on the list is us talking to people. and trying to educate people. And you know, since I've just gone through these bylaws, you know, part of our mission is to understand the priorities of the community, and then try to be some kind of feedback mechanism to the county that, you know, we need to maybe do these things, you know, differently. And so is there a way to think about this whole communication process where we go out and listen, or is there some mechanism? I don't know the solution to it, but somehow we have to be a sounding board, you know, for the community.
We have the neighborhood associations, and then we have that board of neighborhood associations that they meet over at the police station there on just off the Mill Plain, where you know, it offers an opportunity, I think. That's one opportunity, I think, that maybe go by to be able to talk about. It's not only requirements or the, you know, what the public wants, but having the public understand what the laws say, you know, and what the regulations are to do with the street. And I think there's probably less of them understanding what the laws is than us hearing occasionally about what they want.
Yeah. But to your point, I think that part of any presentation has to contain a piece to say, look, this is what the framework looks like, and this is what the ideal world, but we need to hear from you. You know, does it make sense to you? Does it not? What do you like, what you hear or not?
Yeah, I guess the extension of that would be, you know, because sometimes that kind of feedback can be kind of non-value-adding. You know, somebody just got, you know, one problem. Well, they... you wonder if there's some mechanism for like a Clean Water Commission self-help group or something where we go out to other communities and have dialogue, you know, around what are their priorities, and is it something that we can bring back to Clark County to think about? I mean, I really don't know exactly. I'm not articulating this well because I haven't thought enough about it. But is there some means to come back with some legitimate feedback that can actually help the overall process?
I mean, maybe I'm missing your point, potentially, but I would argue that we have public meetings and then at the Q&A when we're providing public outreach. Are our emails available online? Do you know,
I do not know.
Okay. And then there's also a Facebook group that...
Mm-hmm. I want to say no, but I'm not sure.
So I'm not sure if that's what the kind of feedback you're talking about, or if you're talking about feedback from other groups that we can hone in that process.
But to that extent, if there is a value in an email, I'd actually would suggest that rather than having individual emails, we could actually, again, if these are appropriate, just create a master Clean Water Commission
however
we're going to structure it so that you never have to worry about a particular person's name coming up, being missed, et cetera.
Well, we don't want to get ourselves in a situation where we're dealing with complaints from the community.
Yeah.
You know, that's not value-adding for us. Those ought to go to the county. It's the larger feedback, you know, that Portland is doing this and it's really helping with their communication and outreach, you know, and we may not be aware of that because we're not talking to Portland. You know, there may be something going on someplace else that could be if we have a role, it's in providing feedback to the county.
Maybe to that point, being organized and having a single document or place that we go to get feedback and then we can provide it to public work.
But the reality is that most people are either naive to or really don't have an interest in until they hear something. It's I think most of it for me is in life is it if it's in my backyard and I'm concerned about it, it's bothering me, I speak up and say something, and as soon as it's out of my backyard, I go on with my life. So point being is that the outreach efforts in touching these different groups of people certainly maybe creates an opportunity to gather some feedback that would not have existed otherwise. Take care.
Isn't that part of our charter, the whole appearance on the public issues and reporting back to the legal?
Yes, but it only gets any traction when it's something that really is, well, if it's money.
Well, isn't,
but,
I mean,
but
it's
yes,
part of our charter is the whole public appearance, right? And so that would, you know, address what you're talking about. That's our charter. And then take our hearings and our findings and our advice or whatever back to the controller of this group, which is the county manager.
Well, when the next permit comes up, let's just argue down the road a bit, and because of the changes in the requirements of the permit, there's going to be additional costs in order to generate the revenue for to pay those additional bills. The county is going to have to propose, or is going to be looking for additional revenue. So your fee doubles or triples or whatever it happens to be. Yes, I think there probably will be people who come forward to the public who want to. I guess outside of that, I think it is more challenging to get enough interest and attention on a topic that stands out. But it doesn't mean we couldn't or shouldn't, but maybe these outreach efforts will help stimulate a little more discussion. And through that awareness, they may say, oh, you know what, this has always bugged me, or what about this?
Yeah. I don't think we want to be in a situation where we're dealing with complaints like Mr. Smith doesn't want to put a stormwater barrier up or something. He doesn't understand. I think what we need to do is be thinking a little bit kind of larger perspectives. And so it might be that we start out, you know, maybe we get better feedback from organized groups outside the county.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a good thing you brought that up, Mark, because I think that I don't know what the individual counselors are expecting out of this effort. We don't hear from them, or maybe what the county manager is expecting out of this. I think it would also be good if we understood what their expectations were, so that we can, if we need to hold, they have an issue that they want us to hold hearings on, and we understand that, and we do that.
All right. Anything else on sort of our strategic planning thoughts for 2017, which the new leadership will get to answer? No, anything out there? So the next item on our agenda, drum roll, is nomination elections of the 2017 chair and vice chair. So what I'd like to do is to open the floor for nominations for the position of chair of Clark County Clean Water Commission for 2017. All names are welcome. You can nominate yourself if you choose to. Whose name? One of them, but
I would like to nominate Kate because she has been doing a great job sitting in for you.
Okay.
When you've been absent, and I think she'd do a great job.
I think she would too.
In the coming year.
So would Kate be willing to accept the nomination?
I would not be willing to accept, as much as I appreciate that. And I love serving in the vice chairman role. I also feel that I don't get to work in this field day in, day out, unfortunately, one day. I actually would love to nominate Marie, and for this reason, I think she brings a lot to the team. I think she has experience that I can learn from personally, and has done a lot of effort guiding us and making things happen better than a lot of us have. So I really actually like to nominate Marie.
Would Marie allow her name to be placed in nomination?
Yes.
Okay, we have one nomination. Do we have any other nominations for chair for 2017?
Let's vote.
Yeah.
Who?
Let's vote. Well, that's fine. I still would like to do it in writing. So we will pass around our slips of paper. Are there any other nominations properly? Are there any other nominations for chair for 2017? Wait a minute. Are there any other nominations for chair for Clark County Clean Water Commission for 2017? I think that's actually the third. But I'll do it one more time. Sorry. Wait, serious here. Are there any other nominations for the chair of the Clark County Clean Water Commission for the year 2017? Hearing no other, we will close the nominations. We will pass out ballots. And would you please write the name of the candidate you would like to vote for?
We only have one nomination.
I know, but we still have
the paper pen.
Yeah. That way, if somebody doesn't want to say yes, they can. They just don't. They're not putting on a different name on.
Yeah, right.
It's like. I feel like I'm one of the survivors.
Yes.
But we're voting to give her $1 million, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Hold it over.
All right, then I can come and collect it. I'm a little. I do have one announcement. Just a reminder that by the end of the year, the stormwater manual management plan will be updated, and so there will be a part of that process is a requirement to provide the public an opportunity to give some feedback. And so at the January Clean Water Commission meeting, would be a good time to have that happen.
We'll make an announcement that there will be a hearing for our comp session.
Yeah.
So you'll add that to the agenda.
Yeah.
So will that manual be online before that time, or will it be
Yes.
Emailed out to us? Or,
yeah, and then I can also email it out to everyone, but it'll be on the
heavy reading.
Yes.
Well, so the stormwater management plan is a thin document, not big 1,000 pages. Although you will see November 22nd, the big stormwater manual, Urata, so correctional descriptors, errors, and typos, and all that kind of stuff. We'll go to the board of county councilors at the big document. But what we want to bring to you in January is the thinner document, which is the stormwater management plan. This is basically our business plan of what we plan to do in 2017 to meet all of our permit requirements.
And that will be available
online. And we'll send you the link to that document. My goal is at least a week before it's due, hopefully 2 weeks. It will be a draft version. If you need a hard copy of it, just let us know. But if you can read it online, that's great.
And you would like any feedback at the January meeting?
Mm-hmm. That would be there. It's not significantly different from last year's, but there are some changes given that we switched to public works.
Are the changes highlighted, in red or somehow?
It will be strike out in the underlying version.
Okay, thank you.
Any other general discussion items? And we'll wrap that session up. It looks like our next opportunity for public comment. Public comment going once. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I hadn't planned to talk.
Sorry, we did. I'm sure your name was.
Oh, sure. I'm Michelle Brooks. I'm a Clark County resident with some background in stormwater, water quality, and these kind of things. But one of the things that strikes me looking at stormwater in Clark County is the activity around LID implementation and how new it is and how many different forms it's showing up in and how much interest there is as people are driving by and seeing signs and some of them not seeing signs. And anyway, so I wonder if in your outreach there isn't a piece around these LID implementation specifically, the little information, and also, and I don't know how what the county's doing from the technical standpoint, but also, you know, sort of getting some feedback on, you know, what do you see? How do you see these fitting in? I'm not sure. I think it varies who's actually going to end up maintaining some of the system long term. Some may be HOAs, homeowner associations, some may be counties, but having people look at these and watch them, you have the opportunity now because people are really curious. Might be able to get some ongoing, you know, feedback and alerts if something's looking really good or something's not good, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That would help down the road.
Yeah, and that's one of our target outreach efforts that we're going to do, because now that the stormwater has been in place for a year, people were doing LID before the new regulations went into effect, but now it really is everywhere. The parking lots, grocery stores and such. And the biggest challenge would be maintenance, especially the pervious pavement, because that would clog so quickly. The rain gardens and fire retention, so those would be easier to maintain, but there is a lot of need for that. So we do plan to start hosting some workshops for the general public, going out to the Realtors Association, and letting them know, this is what you will be selling when you look at these properties, and this is what this means. So there's different target audiences related to that, the DIA, the Realtors, Homeowners Association, so yes, that's right on exactly.
Marie, in the presentation you guys have been giving here, you've been touching on that one.
Yes.
Okay. So there is a presentation that was finalized a little earlier this year, which has been given a few times. So there is an effort to touch on LID in there. But to your point, it's evolving. Actually, hopefully, it's something that people will be interested in. Now, side note, we do have an open Clean Water Commission position that is posted online. Openings go through the 21st of November. Well, it was just a little commercial.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
I think so.
If
there's something I can offer. The other thing I wanted in terms of the getting some information from people as you're talking to them, you know, the phrase that comes to my mind is, what do you see? Which is sort of general enough, so it's not necessarily going to elicit complaints, but you can still get some maybe useful feedback that way and get a dialogue going.
And as to whether you or anybody else can bring something to the group, it's a broad range group, some levels of expertise in stormwater, some not. So it's really probably more about people who care and want to be involved, who want to participate and make a difference. And I think we pride ourselves on trying to think analytically, first and foremost, that we get data and facts and information, and from there make suggestions and recommendations.
The OLED comment is really, really, really interesting, because I think a lot of people, I think making some of the making slides, you know, the show kind of before and after perspective of what and it's not necessarily all I do is put trees up, but it's but the just the living conditions are so much better when you're living with trees or with the rainwater control gardens and the like that are that, and so it increases property values. And so, you know, there's a bottom line value to doing things right. And so that messaging, I think, is really, really valuable for people. And I think a lot of times people forget about the fact that if the condition or the environment is pleasant to live in, then there's better value in the property. So it's a, it's also
a win-win. Gary, do you have a comment?
I just have a question. We still open for public comment?
Yeah, we're still open for public
comment. Okay. I would hope.
Okay. Any other public comments? No. Hearing no other public comments, we will close the second public comment section, and then we will flip back to any commissioner comments.
I was wondering, it's been a long time since Steve Meyer has attended a meeting.
Yeah.
I know he's been busy, and I know he's not going to renew. So has that position?
It's posted.
Yeah, it's posted. And
the only way I know about that, side note, was that someone outside the county brought it to my attention and asked me about the posting for a Facebook group. And the county manager and I have had past discussions about the importance of working together on filling these positions. And he had previously indicated that the same mistake wouldn't be made a second time, and it has been made a second time, so I should be following up with Mr. McCarthy.
Wait a minute. What did your chairman do?
Well, I'm happy with days of the balance of this year. So the process that we had set up this year, that was supposed to be functioning, it had previously been functioning, was that they would notify the chair and vice chair when they were publishing for an open position, including the cutoff deadline, and that we would be offered the opportunity to participate in the interviews of any of the those applying to the position.
Okay.
I had done that previously. This last time, it did not happen. They apologized, but we seemed to have fallen back on to the same challenge.
I knew that we were going to include the chair and vice chair in the...
We weren't even notified that they had were posting.
Okay.
I found that out surreptitiously.
I definitely apologize
done that. Jennifer, Mr. McCauley's assistant, and I had a long conversation after the law, and it was supposed to be accepted. So I'll circle back and have that second follow-up discussion, just so you know how the process is supposed to work. and it isn't the intent to create robots or anything else. It's just to make sure that there's a good fit with the group, good background, good people running the group are involved in the process. So we will make sure that that's dealt with. My smile. Any other Clark County Clean Water Commission issues, items, or topics for this Wednesday, November 2nd, 2016? Hearing none, then the meeting is adjourned at 8:14 p.m.